Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning, and today my guest is Eric Bendix, who's an Alexander Technique teacher in Asheville, North Carolina. And Eric has devoted quite a bit of attention to the question of how to teach skiing based on Alexander Technique principles. He was inspired by the work of Stephen Shaw, who's quite well known for his work in applying the Alexander technique to swimmers. And Eric has taken that into the realm of skiing. In addition to being an Alexander teacher, he trained originally as an academic philosopher at Oxford and Princeton. We don't get too many of those in the Alexander technique. And he's also a published poet and teacher of world dance traditions. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Nice to talk to you.
Eric, could you start by just telling people who are listening a little bit about what the Alexander technique is?
Well, it's always a tricky question. I often try to evade it or dodge around. It grew out of the theater world. Alexander was an actor, and he had trouble with his voice on stage, and evolved a method of not just freeing up his voice, but of really liberating himself altogether as a person, and found that the methods that he stumbled on or discovered were really applicable to far more than just theater. I would say that the Alexander technique has still not yet entirely outgrown its origins. It's still probably best known in the performing arts world, but a few of us have been attempting to see where it goes when it's applied to sports. And Stephen Shaw, whom you mentioned, has done an amazing job of that with swimming. And Malcolm Balk has done some great work with running. And I've been inspired by their, well, I would say even before I met them, I've been a skier since I was 10 years old. I'm pushing 60 now. So I've been skiing for almost half a century. And my skiing went through a huge change as I began to learn about Alexander technique. And I kept pursuing that and seeing where it would lead. And I guess I must have spent maybe 10, 15 years working out what it would mean to really apply that. Skiing's not a simple thing, and seeing how something like Alexander technique applies to it can take quite a bit of time. It certainly took me quite a bit of time.
My own skiing experience is pretty limited. I haven't been on skis for probably 40 years now, and I never was very good at it. But I do certainly remember both the balance and fear issues coming into play,
Yes.
even on the novice slope. And I know that, I mean, the Alexander technique certainly has a lot to say about balance and fear too, in general, in terms of extra tension that goes along with it. Are those the sort of issues that you deal with in working with skiers?
Absolutely. Those are quite central. I mean, if you think about Alexander's situation as an actor, I think one of the things that an actor easily loses is their sense of composure and balance under the stress of their performance situation. And that's part of why I thought, well, maybe this could be applicable to skiing, because obviously on skiing is all about keeping or possibly losing your balance. And it's also all it's I mean, the fear involved is not really fear of being in front of an audience. The fear is about falling, particularly falling downhill and not being in control of it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say where my ski teaching methods diverge from traditional ski teaching methods is that I attempt to deal directly with that problem.
Mm-hmm.
I would say most ski teaching methods, I was talking to a ski teacher the other day and this made immediate sense to him. I said that the usual way of teaching skiing is from the ground up. Ski teachers usually start by teaching you what to do with your feet and what to do with your knees and your legs. And then the instruction sort of peters out as it rises up through the body. I mean, they're really mostly concerned with that sort of technique of which way to point your knees and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And my ski teaching method starts at the other end. I really start with the head and the neck, which is really where Alexander started. I mean, what I think one of his central discoveries was that human fear reactions start at the head and the neck.
Mm-hmm.
That when mm-hmm. when we flinch or whatever it is that we do in our fear response, that's kind of where it starts, and it then radiates or percolates out to other parts of ourselves. But if we can figure out how to stop reacting sort of at the source, it'll give us a much different, a lot more options for how to respond and how to handle ourselves. So in skiing, I would say that's the first thing. See, in skiing, unlike just walking around on solid ground, or the classic example in Alexander study is sitting in a chair or standing up from a chair. When you have solid ground under your feet, what happens with your head and neck in a fear response does not have immediately observable consequences at your feet, or at least they're not easy to observe. Mm-hmm. Because your feet are stuck on the ground. There's no, you've got friction keeping your feet from moving. But on skis, you don't have friction between your feet and the ground. And if you flinch, it will have immediate consequences at your feet. Basically, your feet will start to come out from under you.
Mm-hmm.
And the right. And you know, if you're pointed downhill, you'll pick up speed and lose control. So what I teach my ski students, which is often very counterintuitive, is instead of rearing back away from where they're headed out of fear, is to go ahead and really look where they're going, look towards the valley, and allow their heads to go first and let the feet be sort of an afterthought.
Mm-hmm. Now, would this be, though, in the context of them having some basic instruction on foot and leg position?
No,
none at all. So when you're working with a novice skier or someone who hasn't even skied,
yes,
you wouldn't be that concerned about the details of what they're going to do with their legs and feet.
No.
At the beginning.
That's right.
You would focus on what Alexander teachers like to call overall use or the head neck relationship, that kind of thing. And then later on, I presume there might be some attention paid to what the things like how to stop and turn, that sort of thing.
Well, let me give you an example.
Okay.
And I should maybe say that ideally my instruction starts indoors where mm-hmm. people aren't even on skis at all, mm-hmm. where they can explore various movements. And then the next step would be to take people out on skis in snow, but on flat land so that they're not sliding downhill, and get to know, and I'll say in just a minute what kind of movements I'm talking about. And then only as a third step to then finally be on sloping snow. Here's a very simple movement. If you're standing or sitting indoors and you simply begin to look to one side and keep looking further and further in that direction, it'll gradually take you into a twist. Same kind of twist that you go into if you're backing up a car, for example, or turning to look to see what's behind you.
Mm-hmm.
On a ski slope, if you have somebody pointed slightly downhill and have them gradually look uphill, that just that movement by itself, which is a movement that's led by the eyes and the head, that movement by itself is enough to actually put a gradual twist through your body that will eventually turn your skis. Now, what it takes to be able to do that is you have to really stick with the task. The task is to gradually move your head. Now, of course, one thing that happens with people when they're frightened is they do sudden things. So if you're on the slope and you're scared, you might, you know, suddenly dart your glance somewhere else, and that would undo what I'm attempting to have you do, which is to only move gradually and slowly, even if you're sliding downhill. Because what happens is if you gradually look uphill, you will come to a gradual stop.
And if you look to the left, it will automatically take you to the left.
That's correct.
That's the approach. Okay.
That's right. Whichever way you look will gradually turn you in that direction. So your job is to get on top of your own, the clarity of your intention of where it is that you really want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And stick mm-hmm. with that intention.
Well, that's interesting, because as you were describing the turning of the head from left to right, I was sitting here doing that and could feel the twist through my spine, at least down. I'm sitting on a fairly high stool, but I could sense how if I kept going, my legs are certainly going to get involved in that, and
they'll eventually turn.
Now, for most of us on flat surfaces with plenty of friction, that little twist that you're talking about doesn't seem to have the same importance, let's say it doesn't seem to have the same immediate dramatic effects.
Right.
But on skis, where your contact through the ski on a slippery surface is itself easily changeable.
Right.
So that's very interesting. So you would begin then ideally with working with someone in your office or in your studio. Is that right?
Yeah, it helps. It helps to have them away from anything that might frighten them. Mm-hmm. So that they can really pay attention to the movement, and then once they're familiar with the movement, then I can gradually sort of bit by bit introduce them to situations that could frighten them, but mm-hmm. maybe they don't have to react to that. And if they don't, then they'll learn something. They'll learn something about what happens if they move that way.
And by the movement, you mean that head turning, body following. And I assume that you're also giving them some information on how to perform that movement more freely and easily than they might on their own initially.
Well, my main instruction is the one I gave, which is that it needs to be smooth and gradual.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because the main thing we're trying to not do in that situation is do something jerky and fast,
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
is what it's tempting to do. Now, that's that's one example, which has to do with rotation, which is a central element to skiing, although it's certainly not the only one. I would say another really important element has to do with leaning. And one of the things that I've observed about skiing, I noticed that when I look at a slope of skiers coming down the mountain, one of the things that jumps out at me about the difference, sort of the main difference between advanced expert skiers and beginners, is that the expert skiers are all leaning this way and that. As they turn, they really bank through every turn, just the way you would bank if you were going around a turn riding on a bicycle. You lean towards the inside of the turn, and that's exactly what the beginners won't let themselves do,
because they don't want to fall.
They're afraid of falling. And they've also been taught to put their skis out in a wedge and to sort of hold their stance. So that's what they're do. So that's what they do. Unfortunately, I think what that results in for most of the skiing public is most people never quite make it past the restriction that that imposes. It's very difficult for people to learn to really literally throw their weight around when they ski and let themselves learn how to fall just the right amount so that you turn rather than actually falling.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting because if you think about the example of walking,
yes,
I think someone who walks well or runs well is constantly losing their balance and regaining it.
Yes.
And people who are unable to do that, presumably fear-related or poor training in the activity, are walking in a sense, but they're walking in a very controlled and ultimately stiff and inefficient manner.
Yes. Yes.
So what you're talking about is kind of the analogy to skiing.
Yes. Yes. I think actually I'm glad you brought up walking, because I think there's a particular example that I've observed of that in walking, which is what happens if you are walking in one direction and you turn a corner. And I think one way I've figured out to explore this is to ask people to try to stay vertically upright as best they can and walk not too slowly, you know, walk at a bit of a pace and try to stay vertically upright as they turn a corner. And I think what you discover when you try to do that is that there's almost no way of doing it without being stiff.
Right, right. Exactly,
and that
I could see that.
That in order to let go of that stiffness, you have to let yourself bank just like you would on a bicycle.
Right.
Going, there's like it might only be a little bit, but I think the natural thing, what makes for a more natural turn, is to allow yourself, or it's basically is to stop worrying about staying rigidly upright and just let your weight adjust as you come around, which is what you would do on a bicycle. You know, you wouldn't, unless you were riding a bike that had training wheels on it, you wouldn't think of staying completely upright as you turned a corner. Completely upright is appropriate when you're going straight, not, you know. Anyway,
right.
And so the same thing applies to skiing, only more so, because you're usually going a good, you know, or you could be going quite a bit faster. And of course, the faster you go, the more you need to lean. And you can see that when you look at ski racers on TV, that at those high speeds, they're really leaning to the max to get around those corners.
And they're also often leaning, to me, just seeing picture movie shots of it, often leaning forward to an extraordinary amount, an awful lot, you know, when they're going straight downhill, which,
yes,
which again, I think then for a novice skier would just seem incredibly scary thing to do.
That's right. That's right. That's the counterintuitive thing yeah. that I mentioned before, that it seems like the scariest thing you could do, like you say, is to really fall towards the valley. But in fact, what happens when you let yourself fall in that towards the direction you're traveling in, what actually happens is your sense of time slows down, and you actually end up having more control rather than less.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because your feet are kind of taking up the rear, you could think of it in terms of our evolutionary history, that originally we were quadrupedal, and our heads led the way in the direction in which we're in the direction in which we locomoted or moved.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's no longer quite true, or at least not in the same way, because our heads now are on top rather than forward mm-hmm. of our spines.
Right.
And so we point in a different direction than we walk in, just in terms of the sort of general relation of the head to the spine. But when you're skiing down a hill, it's as if you're sort of turning yourself back into a dog.
You know? Right, right.
And you're literally going head first down the slope.
Right.
And you're actually, it's interesting because in for a racer, there the head goes first, and the next thing to come are actually the hands and the arms, and the feet kind of take up the rear, just as they would in a quadruped.
Right.
It takes, you have to overcome a lot of fear instinct in order to do that. But
right.
the experience of doing it is not scary. It's actually the opposite. It's sort of like discovering that the thing that you were always afraid of is actually wonderful.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, I never was privileged to have that experience in skiing, but that was long before I'd ever heard of anything like the Alexander technique. Let me just change tack a little bit. We're
yeah.
getting towards the end of our time. Obviously, if you, a listener who is a skier or wants to learn skiing, lives in the Asheville, North Carolina area, Eric would be the guy to see. But what would you say in general about how useful an Alexander teacher could be for a skier, either beginning or more advanced, assuming, as is going to be the case more often than not, that the teacher, him or herself, is not going to be a skier? What would you say about the value of taking lessons from a teacher if there's no skier / Alexander teacher available?
I think it's enormously valuable. I have taught some skiers who knew nothing about Alexander technique, and I didn't breathe a word about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked very, very well. But in terms of really being able to make this material your own, I think particularly working with an Alexander teacher who can work with you standing and sitting, you can learn most of what you need to know right there.
And we should say standing and sitting are two kind of classic activities or frameworks within which many teachers teach the basic principles of the
That's
technique.
Right. That's right. And I think one thing that I think most people who've had Alexander lessons know is that it's not the best way to sit down to sort of over control what you're doing with your legs. It's actually better to just trust that your legs will know what to do and put your attention on not stiffening your neck and letting your head lead the way using the weight of your head. Mm-hmm. And I think what happens when you allow those things is that in a sort of magical kind of way, your legs actually buckle much more easily.
Right. Well, and, you know, I always tell my students that your feet and your legs are just the foot soldiers in the army, and their job generally is not to do a lot of thinking, but to fit in with a broader pattern.
Follow orders from up above.
Up above, which, right. You know, in classical Alexander thinking is the head, neck, upper torso relationship. What you're saying is that getting some direct experience of doing that in a very mundane activity like standing up or sitting down or walking, which teachers might use in lessons as well, has a good chance of carrying over into something like skiing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Don't have a teacher that can go out on the slopes with you and show you stuff because they don't know how to ski, you could still get quite a bit of benefit.
You could get, I think, the most essential things that you need to know. Mm-hmm. I would say if every time you're out on skis and are about to move forward, going to go down the slope, if before you move, if you remind yourself to free your neck and let your head drop forward allow your sort of face to look ahead. If you just remember those things, you'll end up learning pretty much everything that I learned.
Well, maybe that would be a good place to end this interview, unless you have something that we haven't covered that you think is important to include?
Seems like a stopping place to me.
Good place. Great. Well, my guest today has been Eric Bendix, who's an Alexander Technique teacher who lives in Asheville, North Carolina. And we didn't mention this, but I believe you're writing a book on skiing and the Alexander Technique. Does it have a title at this point?
Tentatively, The Art of Alpine Skiing.
The Art of Alpine Skiing. So,
and there's a website you can go to.
Oh, we're going to put a link to your website by the interview. So, yes,
okay, great.
Eric has a website, and we'll put a link to it. And I assume as soon as the book is out, there'll be some reference to it on your site.
Oh, of course.
Eric, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Well, it's a pleasure. Thank you, Robert.